Okay, picture the thing that you've always wanted to learn. Maybe it's how to play chess or creative writing or gardening. Now picture learning that thing from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That is what you get with Masterclass. Masterclass is such an easy way to help you learn more about something you're interested in. You can seriously find classes on everything from turning your passion into achievements with cultural icon Martha Stewart to principles of improv from Amy Poehler. Are you kidding me? Y'all, I did a cooking class with Gordon Ramsay. And it was so much fun. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best and become your best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 plus of the world's best. For just $10 a month, an annual membership gets you unlimited access to every instructor. And you can access Masterclass on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even in audio mode. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Don't waste another minute to start your learning journey with Masterclass. Right now, our friends get an additional 15% off of any annual membership at masterclass.com/soundsfun. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/soundsfun. Masterclass.com/soundsfun. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with some samples. So if you have read That Sounds Fun, you probably remember the story of me trying to get a dog and then realizing I was allergic. Sad day. And this is why I'm glad I found Claritin D, because an allergy attack is literally the worst. So I am thankful to have it on hand around my friends, pets, and other things. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers, and Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Amen to that. There are also a lot of seasonal allergy sufferers over here at AFD Inc. and at the That Sounds Fun Network. So Claritin D really works for this crew. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It is time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. So you can find Claritin D at your pharmacy counter. Just ask a pharmacist for Claritin D at the pharmacy counter, and you don't even need a prescription. Just go to Claritin.com right now, and you can get a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of That Sounds Fun. I am your host, Annie F. Downs, and I am so glad to be with you here today. Our music in the background, as you know, is from our good friend, Mr. John McLaughlin. Make sure you grab a copy of his new album, Angst and Grace, and just let that play in your life. I think you're going to totally love it. Our next generation conversation has concluded. How fun was that month? We're not going to do that every month, but we're going to do that every now and again where we kind of do a little series. In fact, if you are now at the end of January and wanting to, like, you've kind of gotten through the month, there's some rhythms you want to bring back into, you're figuring out what you want 2019 to look like. If you actually go back to the beginning of 2018, we did a whole series on some rhythms in your life that I think have been were really helpful for me in 2018 and I've brought into 2019. But our first series this year was The Next Generation with Amy Bird, Drew Hill, JP Pakluda, and Holland, and a little bit about my new book for teens called A Life of Lovely. Today, we are shifting forward and talking to a pastor that we know and love around these parts, Pastor Scott Sauls. Scott is here in Nashville, the pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church, one of my very favorite communities here in town. And he has multiple books out that I love and adore, but his most recent one, Irresistible Faith, Becoming the Kind of Christian the World Can't Resist, just released on Tuesday. So happy release week, Scott. We are so honored you would be on the show with us during that week. So friends, settle in. This is a really important and special conversation with Scott. He gets really honest about some things he's walking through as well, which came to me feels really interesting for this to be a show at the end of January when we kicked off with Pastor Carrie Newhoff talking about burnout. We're actually going to hear a little bit about what Scott is walking through himself right now. And I hope you will commit to pray for him like I have. But this is a really interesting conversation as we process through some of the things that we've walked through with Scott since he was last here, as well as what he's walking through now and what irresistible faith really looks like. So here is our podcast friend, one of our favorite pastors and author of Irresistible Faith, Scott Sauls. Do you have to buy things differently as a very tall, like when you buy a car?
Yeah, it's a little bit awkward because if I buy an XL shirt, it's too baggy.
Uh-huh.
If I buy a large shirt,
it's a belly shirt.
Well, almost. That's a disturbing thought. But yeah, I have to get like the big and tall stuff. It's a little awkward, but not quite devastating.
When did you get 6'5"? How old were you?
I was 6'5" when I was in 10th grade. So I haven't grown taller. I've grown wider since then.
What are y'all teaching through right now at Christ Church?
So right now we're going through a series called Encounters with Christ. And so we're going through the different sort of face-to-face encounters that Jesus had with different people in the four Gospels. It's been a blast. Yeah, it's been a lot.
How long is it going? How long do you run the series?
It's going to be a long one. This one will probably end up being about 30.
Really?
Yeah, we
do long. Do you like series. That? Do you Sometimes, like picking them like that?
Yeah, you know, we start a long series every September, and it usually will go all through this, almost all the way through the school year. And then we do the short series during the summer and maybe a short spring series or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
And we'll take breaks, too. We'll hit pause for 3 weeks to do mini series on different things. But
how many in a year, how many Sundays are you preaching?
I am at about 39 to 40 now.
Okay.
So yeah, we've got a good team. So, I get to take off some.
At the beginning of the month, I had Carrie Newhoff on and we talked a lot about burnout because I was like, let's set our friends up in 2019 to not burn out by recognizing burnout before it kind of eats you alive.
Yeah.
How have you protected yourself from that?
I'm actually not very good at it.
Really?
And so, we were talking Enneagram before you
hit
the record button.
Of course
I am a
we
solid three, which, I guess the shadow side of the three is that it's really, really hard not to be a workaholic. And so I work a lot and I'm always just thinking what's the next thing and productivity and get it done and planning and all of those sorts of things. And on top of that, and maybe because of that, I have a little bit of an insomnia problem that's creeped up on me in the last couple of years. And so I'm tired a lot.
So you just
kind of lay there awake at night a lot. But I mean, there's some benefits. I mean, you get to dream and brainstorm and pray and other things during that time. But give me the choice and I'll actually fall asleep. I'll usually be able to go about four and a half hours of sleep and then I wake up and it's just hard to go back to sleep. But that's all right.
Working with
a sleep specialist. But that wasn't your question really.
No,
your
but question that's was, good. Keep going.
But, I try to be done with everything by Friday at noon for the week as far as just like work and, all that stuff goes. And then, do fun stuff with my wife and friends on Friday night and Saturday. And Saturday's usually just kind of knock around day. And that's when I'll usually pick up a book and sit down with it for a long time or go out and do something fun. So half of Friday and all day Saturday are typically the unplugged days, but I'm going at it, I guess, for the rest of the week. So
tell me when you decided, I think a lot of people will have an illness or not sleep well, or even emotionally deciding about a counselor. When did you go, we need to call a sleep specialist? Like, when did it stop being like a problem and started being like, I need a professional to step in?
Yeah, it was last year, actually. I saw this doctor at the Vanderbilt Sleep Center, Vanderbilt Medical, named Dr. Beth Mallow, and she's like a really, renowned sleep specialist. And so we did a sleep study, which they hook you up to all these wires.
I
knew I had a problem when I couldn't fall asleep for the sleep study.
Right,
so they
right.
couldn't get the data. But luckily I fell asleep for about 45 minutes during that night they were able to get enough data to get a treatment plan and everything. But the treatment plan hasn't worked that great. So I'm actually going back to her later this month to explore next options. But it was what led to it was really just a few months of, oh my goodness, like I've never slept great, but now it's just at next level horrible of just just being my brain just not being willing to turn off and shut down. And so yeah, we're still working on it for sure, and need all the prayers anybody's willing to give. Yeah. But
I did not know that. I'm so sorry.
Well, you wonder too if some of it is self-imposed, because I willingly don't unplug very much. I decide not to unplug, and God's even in the scriptures talks about a rhythm of life where you do unplug and practice the Sabbath principle and those sorts of things. And if I'm being honest, a lot of my leisure is just really thinking about like, what can the next hill be to tackle, And so, it's one of my growth areas.
You're really good at tackling hills. That's the problem. You're like, Annie, don't say that.
Well.
But you are.
Well, thanks.
You are. You're such a trusted voice and such a good pastor that I do want you creating a billion resources for us and content for days. But I also want you to sleep.
Annie.
I think it's important that people hear from a pastor that you've already been on the show, so people already know you that may not live in Nashville, but also for a pastor, I mean, it almost feels like you're in the middle versus at the beginning or the end, where you're like, yeah, I recognize there was a problem and I dealt with it before it became this, like, now I'm in the hospital for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Though if that happens, that's totally fine. I mean, it feels like you paid attention to your signals in your head.
Yeah. And it just happens to be one of those afflictions. It's very complicated. You try one thing, it may work a little bit, it may not.
Yeah.
And so we're about to sort of figure out what the next thing to try is. And so.
Yeah. Do you wake Patty up too? Or are you like, I'm up, you got to be up?
She sleeps like a rock. I think she takes like one breath a minute.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll check her pulse in the middle of the night, just make sure she's still with us. But she sleeps like a rock.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm really mad at her for that. And sometimes I'm just like, oh, I'm so glad at least one of us can do that. But I try to tiptoe around if I'm up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Not wake
when
up.
Did, what was the night? I just wonder if there's a night that stands out to you, only because for me with when I started counseling, there was a day where I made decisions where I went, this is it. This is when you bring a professional in, is when you buy an airplane ticket and fly away from everyone and don't tell anybody where you're going. Like, this is next level. Was there, because the first night you can't sleep it and the night you call a specialist.
Right. No, it's not. No, it's for me, it had been probably 6, 7, 8 months of maybe being able to fall asleep for a decent amount of time once or twice in a week on average. And then I think what really hit the, what triggered, okay, we've got to do something, was I think I had like 4 consecutive nights where I didn't sleep. Just laying there.
Yeah.
And nothing would work. Like I even had a season where I tried Ambien and not even Ambien.
Asleep. Scott.
And so it's kind of bad. Like, my brain is not working in some way, shape, or form. It's not working like it should in that way.
So
we'll try the next thing.
Right. And where is the line of where spiritual warfare and battle is involved here?
Oh, it's right in the center of.
Does it feel like that? Do you feel like this is?
I do, because it slows me down. I mean, I feel like there's so much that I've got that I want to do, and typically by about 1 o'clock I'll hit a wall.
Yeah.
Maybe that's God's design. I mean, God sometimes limits us in order to teach us other things like dependence and rest, and the world is not on my shoulders.
Yeah.
It's on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And, he uses me only because he loves me, not because he needs me.
And so
those important reminders come along when you're not able to sort of fulfill what you feel like your capacity should be, when you're slowed down in that way or in other ways. I mean, there are other ways along the way that we're hindered from being able to do what we feel like we ought to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And those are always good occasions to just reflect on who God is and who we are, and realize, hey, that old song, he's got the whole world in his hands.
Yeah.
It really is true.
And
these frustrating moments are also helpful moments to remember that push comes to shove. It's all gonna turn out okay, because he's got this.
Yeah, Yeah, and he, in some way, he will sustain you.
That's right.
Right.
However he thinks best, right?
Yeah. I just think it is another reminder that the work that the men and women on the front lines of the church are doing is important and needs to be paid attention to. So those of us who are lay people in a church, we don't know the checks y'all are writing emotionally and spiritually and sleep-wise that we don't ever see.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it is kind of crazy because I think the last couple of years, God's given us more to be part of and more to do and more to be engaged with and expanded, the different ministry opportunities that we've got. And you would think, well, along with that ought to come a little bit of extra energy.
And
there's still 24 hours in a day. You don't get more hours than somebody else does or than you used to get. And so, you know, you roll with it. So.
That's right. 2019 will be the year that you sleep. That's what we're going to pray.
That'd be awesome.
The year that you sleep a lot.
Oh, the Annie F. Downs said it here.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's what I'm going to pray. I'm writing in my journal tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
That is what I'm going to pray. I just moved into this new condo, and I have a very small room that's too small to make a guest room, is one of the rooms. And so I've just kind of made it like, I call it a library, like I'm bougie. But on the wall, I'm putting sticky notes and notes of things I want to pray for every day. So I'm like, I write it in my journal, and then I'll put up a Scott Saul sleeping in 2019 sticky note.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Well, I will pray that down because I love sleep.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. You're like, Annie, you don't know. You don't even know how awesome it is. Yeah. Okay, last time you were on the show was fall of 2016.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, let me think. I'm trying to think back to the dates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were on right after Crosspoint's founding pastor left.
Yes, that's right.
One of the reasons I asked you to be on is I was like, I can't pretend like this isn't the most painful thing I'm walking through right now. Will you please come speak into this as a person who went to the church? And now you've walked closely with us in this process, and now Pastor Kevin's been here for about a year. Tell me what you've seen happen to the church.
To your church?
Yeah, to Crosspoint, and then the church, the big church in general in Nashville.
Yeah, I think Nashville is one of those cities that has a lot going for it and also is set up for stunted growth.
Really?
I'll explain that. Yeah. It's got a lot going for it in that there are so many really, really good churches.
Right.
But the challenge with that you did not succumb to, Annie Downs, is that when one church is going through a hard time, it's very tempted to start looking around and to consider other options, when actually that struggling season can end up being the greatest opportunity to grow and to really lean into the things that God calls us to be as followers of Christ, which are people who forgive, who reconcile, people who are patient, people who, people who stick with it.
Sorry, and, there's the
this
loudest
is awesome.
Music.
I love
happening.
This.
It's birthday. There's a birthday.
All right, good.
And so when there's a birthday, they dance.
It's like a restaurant.
Sorry.
That's very awesome. I love that.
Very funny. So sorry.
Should we go join them?
I mean, right? If you want to, we always can.
I'm not a very good
it
dancer, but
forever.
I bet you are. I think one of the best opportunities, and this doesn't just apply to church commitments, it applies to any commitment. Like if you're in a relationship, if you're in a friendship, if you're in a marriage, the real test of the depth of our love and the test of the depth of our covenant with each other is not when things are going great and happy and growing and easy. It's when they get hard.
Yeah.
And the people who, like yourself, Annie, who are able to push through those hard seasons and stay faithful and stay loyal and stay hopeful and prayerful, now you have a story to look back on that you can tell about how God worked through sticking with a hard thing. I mean, you think about Christ. I mean, what if he bailed on us every time we got difficult or we became difficult? If that was the criteria for whether or not he was going to stick it out with us, I think we'd all be pretty worried.
Yes, right? That's exactly right.
And so in a way, it's a great opportunity to really lean into who Christ is in us and who Christ wants to be in us. You know, he's faithful to us when we're not so faithful to him. Mm-hmm. And so to have an opportunity to mirror that can be a really, you know, transformative experience. I hope you look back, you're able to look back on retrospect.
I feel like I'm still processing so much of what I was meant to gain and learn and be and all of that. And part of it is I did go some other places just to have Sundays where I didn't feel sad and just to, you know, but what you said on the show was the mantra in my head is I said, why should I stay when I want to leave? And you said, if you stay when it gets hard, that's when you grow up. Mm. And I thought, okay, I want to grow up here.
Wow.
I want to figure out what that looks like.
Well, I wasn't implying that you weren't growing up.
I know. I didn't feel like you were.
meant you in the general sense.
In the general sense, yes.
Yeah.
But there were, I mean, for sure, it has matured me in a way. And I said to someone, I spoke last weekend out of town, and someone said, what do you know now that you didn't know? And I said, well, I actually believe that the local church is the hope of the world in ways that I never did before because it did not die. And I thought it was going to die.
Yeah.
Like I thought all these, the staff was working as hard as they could. People were giving it their very best. And pastors around town were generous to us and came and spoke. And I thought we still weren't going to make it. And some churches don't. And that doesn't mean the church has died. But in this story, the Crosspoint survived as a church, as an expression of the local church, and continues to survive. And so I feel like I saw what Jesus does when he cares more about the bride than I ever knew he did.
Yeah. Well, I saw the other day you guys are adding a third service at your Bellevue location, which is really cool.
It's amazing. It's just, like it feels like a real gift to have you back on the show because I love how the pastors in our city care for each other. And I know that you've connected with Kevin and some other pastors as well and just kind of going like, look, you were one of the voices that helped us get here.
That's awesome. Well, I'm a Kevin fan. I actually texted him on the way.
Here,
just telling him that. So,
I am too.
Yeah, it's really great to see you guys, you know, thriving and you know, moving in a new direction under new leadership. And I love his emphasis on prayer, especially and you know, that, you know, from the first time I met him, that seemed to be like his thing. Like, nothing worth building is built without the undergirding of prayer and seeking God's face. And so, I trust he's leading you all really well in that too. So,
okay. So speaking of prayer, you know, there are a lot of our friends who are listening that for 2019 decided they were going to do new things, right? So if somebody wants to pick up prayer as a discipline this year, how would you tell them to start that?
Wow, that was my blog post this week.
Was it? So, oh my gosh, okay, good. We'll link to it so everybody can go read it.
Bible and prayer, everybody kind of gets back to that or tries to get back to that or talks. I like your phrase, the New Year's experiment, sort of take the pressure of the resolution off and call it an experiment. But I think there's some really great resources that are available to help people who are maybe intimidated by that. You know, some of the folks that attend our church, Rachel Myers and Amanda Williams, you know, started this organization called She Reads Truth. And there's also a He version of that. Yes. And then they're moving into kind of kids and teenagers as well.
Amazing.
And so
it's
an outstanding resource to, put in people's hands, and
they talked about you when they were on the show last.
Oh,
they
really
talked about having you as their pastor.
Oh, wow.
Well,
okay.
Really,
that's fun. Yeah. So, actually, Amanda and David are at our Cool Springs location, which is pastored by Russ Ramsey, who I think's been on your show as well.
Yeah.
But that resource is gold because it takes the intimidation factor away for people who are sort of new to reading the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, there's a nice, short, trustworthy, lovely, you know, essay around whatever scripture is featured for the day, and they do really helpful series. It delivers straight to your inbox every morning.
Really,
they give you the weekend off, even so. But there's that, and there are other resources too. You know, my mentor from New York, Tim Keller, wrote a magnificent book on prayer, and it's just a wonderful sort of how-to as well as history of prayer.
What's it called?
Just called Prayer.
I don't have that one, I don't think.
Came out last couple of years.
Okay.
another one by a guy named Paul Miller called A Praying Life, yes. which is just very accessible and beautiful yeah. And compelling. And I'm sure your pastor, Kevin, has like a ton of go-to resources too, but,
right.
but I think he's a big E.M. Bounds yes, fan yes. from what I understand. And yeah. so, but you know, the point isn't necessarily the resources out there, but really, you know, listening to what those resources are saying and actually getting in front of God and receiving from him what he's telling us in his word. And then, yeah. you know, prayer can be as simple as just repeating God's words back to him and, yeah. and then putting our thoughts around those words that he says to us in the form of a prayer back to him. Yeah. It's as simple as that. You know, when Jesus says, pray in my name and according to my will, that's the most sure way that we can do it is take the things that he's already given us in his revealed word and then make them our own and present them back to him, you yeah. know? But yeah, good time of year to think about re-upping
right?
with that.
But, same, yeah.
And to do it with other people too, can you know, where it's not just you alone, but to make a practice of having other people being in the same room with you mm-hmm. and you're all kind of agreeing with each other's yeah. prayers can be a beautiful, empowering thing.
That's one of the reasons I love She Reads Truth and He Reads Truth is mm. that I know whatever I'm reading that day, a bunch of other
yeah.
people are reading that
yeah.
day.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's easy to connect. And last year during Lent, 4 or 5 of us read the same book every
mm-hmm.
morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we were all doing our Lent practices, yeah. we also were, okay, I'm checking in
yeah.
not only about this Lent practice, but to yeah. also say, I read today and here's what stood out to me.
Right.
And, so I just think it reminds you that you're not alone in mm-hmm. something
mm-hmm.
when you do it that way.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you've prayed for things and not gotten them.
Yeah.
But you've prayed for things and seen God move too.
Mm-hmm.
Which do you think happens more?
I think pray and wait happens more.
Really?
I don't know if it's because I'm not courageous enough or it's because I'm not too presumptuous, right?
I'm plenty courageous.
I'm a lot more general than I am specific
yeah.
in my prayers in general. Like I'll like when I pray for my family, I'll pray for my kids, the fruit of the Spirit. You know,
yeah.
Lord, Abby and Ellie, would you make them loving and joyful and peaceful and patient and kind and good and faithful
yeah.
and gentle and self-controlled and those sorts of things. And kind of leave the imagination of what that looks like in their unique cases up to God who created them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a little bit of a cop out, but you know, truth be told, I don't exactly know exactly what God wants or how God wants to specifically develop each of my kids.
Yeah.
I just know what he wants them to become. And so yeah. I try to kind of pray toward the becoming vision
yes.
of God
yes.
for them. And for my church as well. And, you know, like we don't pray for like certain number of people
right.
or this, that, or the other. We just pray mainly for health and
yeah.
for a life-giving thing to develop in our community that points people to Christ, you know,
yeah.
and that demonstrates how beautiful he is. And,
yeah.
and so, yeah.
I have a friend in a dating relationship and she said, I've been praying that he would encounter God in a way that changes his life, and then asking God that our relationship would reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
She said, so then I know whatever's going on with us, I know God wants to answer that prayer.
Mm.
She's like, so, 'cause I don't know what to pray mm-hmm. for me and him, but I do know to pray that he would encounter God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's given her yeah. so much peace
yeah.
while she's waiting for the answer
yeah.
because she knows that God, she knows she's praying in alignment with what God would have for this guy anyway.
Yeah.
Even if it's not going to give her what she wants,
yeah.
she's going after what God wants. And I think learning to pray like that, saying what you really want,
mm.
like, of course you want Abby and Ellie to be joyful and loving. And
yeah.
you want all that, but also
yeah.
trusting that God sees way more than we see.
Yeah.
So prayer is such an interesting, it is such a mystery, but it's not at the same time, right? It's both.
Yeah.
I'm figuring it out. I feel like I say, Lord, teach me how to pray more than just about anything.
Yeah.
And asking for wisdom.
Well, it's a good prayer. I mean, right. even the disciples were asking that questions a couple years in.
Right,
so,
I know.
Yeah.
Hey, friends, just interrupting this really great conversation to tell you about a couple of sponsors who are making this show possible, Church Home and Samaritan Ministries. We're always seeing headlines about tech. Is it helping us or hurting us? That kind of thing. And the fact is, it can actually do both. You guys know this. We've talked about it a lot on our phones. We can be connected to anyone, anywhere, but how do you actually find meaningful, positive connections and tune out all the negative noise? For me, it's this new Church Home Global app. And what I love about Church Home is it's not about excluding people. It's not about being perfect. It's just about being together where everyone is welcome. Church Home was actually started 25 years ago with the belief that church isn't so much about the place, but about the people. I'm a huge fan of the local church, and I really believe in gathering together on Sundays and being together. And Church Home is such a good supplement for that and such a good way that when you can't connect as easily in person, it's a different way to connect. And that's the thinking behind the Church Home Global app, where you connect with people all around the world, have honest discussions, and create meaningful relationships all from your phone. And with Church Home Global, you always have access to a positive space and a strong community of people. So join me today in the Church Home Global app. Download the free Church Home Global app, available on App Store or on Google Play, or text podcast to 555-888. That's Church Home, C-H-U-R-C-H-O-M-E. There's only one H, C-H-U-R-C-H-O-M-E, Global, available on the App Store or Google Play, or text podcast to 555-888. Thanks to our sponsor, Samaritan Ministries. Samaritan Ministries takes the loving care of Jesus and applies it to healthcare. For 25 years, this healthcare sharing ministry has helped Christians support one another financially, emotionally, and spiritually in the midst of medical needs. As a member, each month, I'm assigned to another person who has a medical need. I get their prayer requests so that I can pray specifically for their situation, and I can write a note of encouragement to send with my share directly to them. It's really convenient because I can do this through the mail or online, which is easier for me. And then if I were to say, I don't know, break my arm, my Samaritan Ministry friends would get my prayer request and do the same thing for me. If you want to learn more about how you can be a part of this awesome community, visit SamaritanMinistries.org/thatsoundsfun. That's SamaritanMinistries.org/thatsoundsfun. Now back to my conversation with Scott. Okay, so let's talk about your new book, can we? That's okay. Because your last one, From Weakness to Strength, that was for leaders. It's innumerable how many leaders I sent that one to.
Thanks, Annie.
I just think it's absolutely brilliant. All your stuff. Jesus Outside the Lines, Befriend, and From Weakness to Strength. And then this one is called Irresistible Faith. Okay, so why? Why was that the next, after you wrote to leaders, why was the next right thing to write a book about faith?
Well, it's a biography of Annie Downs. So, did you not know this?
What a terrible use of your time.
It's a story of your life. And the publisher said, let's call it Irresistible Faith. And so,
oh my gosh, Scott, you're too kind.
All the people that I know who know you or know about you think you are irresistible as a human being. But in truth, that title is the publisher's title. I wanted a different one.
Oh, can you tell us what you wanted?
So there's this quote from Madeleine L'Engle, Wrinkle in Time.
Yes.
You know, she's famous for that novel, but
her nonfiction is where it's at to me.
Oh yeah. The Reflections on Faith and Art is where this quote comes from.
Okay.
I wanted to call the book A Light So Lovely, which in retrospect, it's good that we didn't, because a book just came out about her life by that title.
Yes, I was about to say, but, that is the title. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Scott.
So the publisher, the Lord and the publisher saved me from that. But the quote is, and this is what I hope the book conveys.
Yeah.
She says, we draw people to Christ not by telling them how right we are and how wrong they are, but by showing them a light that is so lovely that they can't help but ask what the source of that light is.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's a loose paraphrase, but I think we live in a time right now, especially where the narrative or the reputation of Christians, evangelical Christians, especially, is about as low as it can go in the culture.
Yeah.
I think no one trusts us. Well, I think it's really unfortunate who's chosen as the poster children of the movement that we're part of, right?
That's exactly right.
Because there's so many amazing stories that that aren't told.
Right.
And so that being said, you know, even take the narrative about Christians out of the picture, you know, that we were just talking about, and think about the political climate that we're in. Think about how, you know, people sort of tribalizing and echo chambers and us against them, and you know, different groups and generations being suspicious about each other, never right. giving each other the benefit of the right. doubt. And I'm asking myself, you know, what if Christians' greatest witness right now is just straight up kindness yeah. and responding to this environment with the love that we were created to express yeah, yeah. in the first place, and look less to things like political arguments and Facebook rants and angry blogs, and more to surprising our neighbors and our colleagues and the world with, mm. you know, or our world, whether our world's a big world with a lot of influence or whether our world is a small world, like a home or a neighborhood or a, mm-hmm. a public school or whatever, that our influence would be more life-giving and that maybe a movement could develop around Christianity where, you know, like in the first century, it says that their quality of life, this is Acts chapter 2, I think, it was so compelling. You know, they were so generous yeah. that they became the kind of community that everybody wanted to be part of, whether they were a believer or not. Everybody yeah. wants this kind of love. Everybody yeah. wants this kind of relation. You know, Jonathan Edwards called, you know, heaven a world of love. Well, what if thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, meant, you know, bringing aspects of that world of love that God has created down through the people of God. And you know, it says in the book of Acts that the Christians, who were a very small minority in the Roman Empire, were enjoying the favor of all the people. Like they were experienced as the best neighbors, as the people you wanted working for you, yeah. as the people that you wanted to work for. They were the ones that you expected would be the first responders if you got a bad diagnosis, or when yeah. were in a crisis, or your spouse left you, or you became widowed. No matter what your belief system, you would expect the Christians to show up first. Mm. And that kind of thing actually happens a lot right now. Yeah. Like if you look at Nicholas Kristof, who writes for the New York Times, and he would identify as an agnostic, but he's really intrigued by evangelical Christianity specifically, because he says, you know, I cover poverty all over the world, and I don't care what they say at the New York cocktail parties that I'm part of, where Christians are oftentimes the punchline.
Right.
The Christians are the ones, they're the first ones to show up, they're the last ones to leave, and they're the ones who are emptying their pockets in order to help the most needy, vulnerable people in the world. Yeah. And yeah. so, you know, and I think that plays into what Madeleine L'Engle was saying, that here you have a decidedly secular guy who's not really sure what he believes about God, and yet he's noticing something beautiful in terms of the way that Christian people are interacting with the world. Mm-hmm. What Irresistible Faith does is it just tries to dream up, you know, what could it look like? What if, you know, what if the church could become that again mm-hmm. in the culture, not a power-driven political moral majority. That project failed. I mean, let's look back and let's just right. count the ways that project of trying to turn the world Christian through politics and power plays, and let's just count the ways that's failed.
Right.
Because that's not how Jesus came. Jesus came as an infant born to a couple of poor teenagers from a town called Nazareth, which was a lot less like Williamson and Davidson County, yeah. and a lot more like Grundy County, right? You don't hear much, you know, because it's, you know, that's like kind of a Rust Belt right. you know, equivalent in the Middle East, where, you know, that's where poor people live. That's where yeah. lepers and sick people live, because that's the only places they could afford. And, you know, even one of the disciples, Nathaniel, says, can anything good come out of Nazareth?
Right,
you know,
right.
And that's where Jesus chose to come out of. And then you look at all the associations that he kept, and you know, they're a disproportionately low number of A-listers in his inner ring, because the A-listers aren't really interested in him, because he's poor, he doesn't have an education, and so on. And yet he's this magnetic force with people who are hungry to be known, yeah. and with people who are hungry to be part of a community, and hungry to, you know, devote their lives to something meaningful and bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. And you know, Christ dies, rises from the dead, sends the Holy Spirit, and all of a sudden the church becomes what Christ was, to the world around them. And Pentecost happens, and you've got this movement that, you know, by the third century AD, you've got emperors who were like Hitler was to the Jews, to the Christians, like Emperor Julian. The history books call him Julian the Apostate, right? Because he despised Christians. Like, he was a Saul of Tarsus of his time. He just wanted to get rid of Christians because they said Jesus is Lord instead of Caesar is Lord. And there's this letter. Have you heard about this? This letter? So he writes this letter to a friend, and he's frustrated. And he says, I've tried with all my might to get rid of the Christians. And everyone that I kill, 10 of them, 10 more of them pop up. Yeah. And the secret to their movement, the secret to their success, is that they take better care of our people than we do. They take better care of Rome than Rome does.
Oh, wow.
They love us better than we love ourselves.
Yeah.
And they love us better than we love each other. And that's unstoppable, the emperor, he had all the resources, he had all the money, he had all the political power, all the gravitas, all the social networks, everything. And we're naming our dogs after Nero and Caesar, we're naming our children after Joseph and Mary and Paul,
exactly right?
So, what if we got back to that place of humility and that place of making eye contact with people and asking more questions than giving answers, and taking the humble place and looking for opportunities to serve, looking for opportunities to surprise people with something life-giving instead of something life-sucking, because we live in such a life-sucking environment right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm trying to advocate for that. I'm also trying to affirm to Christians that whatever your work is, if you're doing anything creative, if you're doing anything restorative, redemptive, fixing a person, helping a person heal a place, heal a thing, heal, your work has just as much a place in the kingdom of God as mine does.
Yes.
And I think that there's this massive lack of understanding among us that all work matters.
Yes.
That your job does not exist to support the job of missionaries and pastors.
Right.
Your job is
but
part
you know
of
that
what
was
God's
such
doing.
A narrative that we were told growing up is like, you're either a missionary or you stay home and support the missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And
you do support the missionaries
for sure,
but your work is mission.
Yes.
Your work is calling. If you're an accountant, you're doing orderly things, and God's a God of order. If you're an entrepreneur or a marketer, you're doing creative things, and God's a creator. If you're in fashion, you're creating beauty, and God's beautiful. You know, and so there's just everything is an opportunity to image God in the world, and so there's a big chunk in the book about that, and also about the poor and mercy and justice. And
why did it matter to you for people to feel like their job matters?
Oh gosh. I mean,
cause I haven't written that book. Why was that in you?
Well, one was the influence of Tim Keller and the Center for Faith and Work. And then we launched something similar out of Christ Presbyterian, the church I pastor here in Nashville, called the Nashville Institute for Faith and Work.
Yes. People love it. Yeah. I love it. But I mean, some of my friends have gone through.
Yeah. You need to go
programs.
Speak at something.
Okay. I just would love to come learn. I don't even need to speak. I mean, I'll sing for my supper, but I would love to come learn.
Well, nifw.org, but the director there is Missy Wallace, and she's doing a great, great job there. But the reason why we felt like this was an important thing to launch out of the church is that I think that there is such a gap in so many Christians' mind between Sunday and Monday, that the two are almost separate worlds. Like you have your faith life, and then you have your work life, and the two are kind of separate departments. Like Dorothy Sayers wrote this essay called Why Work? And she says that's the biggest mistake the church has ever made, is to look at, say, she is the example of a woodworker, and look at that woodworker and say that his job as a Christian is to not get drunk, to come to church, and to keep his nose clean. What the church should be saying is make really good tables.
Yes.
Because think about what kind of tables must have come out of the carpenter's shop in Nazareth.
Yeah.
And there's a dignity to the work God gives us. You know, the first great commission that God spoke was not go make disciples. It was tend my garden. That was the first great commission to Adam and Eve. And then the second great commission only happened after sin came into the world, right? And we needed salvation from our own choices. But anyway,
I literally never thought about that, that mm-hmm. like the first thing he told us to do was take care of the garden.
Yeah. There's not only permission, there's almost, it's almost like a mandate to work really hard at loving your work and what you do, and realizing that, look, whether you're a CEO or a middle manager or changing diapers, you know, whether you're, it's just you in an office by yourself or you're surrounded by people, it matters. Like if you're creating, if you're restoring, you're doing the work of God with your hands and your heart. And I think if our imaginations could go there where the scriptures are in terms of our work, what kind of life-giving impact could that have on work environments, on whole industries? You know, and I think Nashville is a hotbed for that. I think there's so much opportunity here with all the different sectors that are represented and all the faith-oriented people that lead in our city. And so, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I hope it takes.
Yeah. Why are you the right guy to write Irresistible Faith?
Oh my goodness. I don't think you know, I'm an
You're three. You should know.
I'm an act. Because I'm ambitious. I want to draw attention to myself.
I get in so much trouble because I never have twos on. But I'm like, I'm sorry. Nashville's full of threes and sevens. I can't help you.
Isn't it true? Like Nashville is a three. The city is a three and a seven. Like it's a three and a seven.
It's all of us. I know.
But yeah, I'm an accidental author in answer to your question. I never intended to write books.
And really?
I just fell into it. And so... Yeah, I got here and, you know, a couple of agents and publishers reached out and said, hey, why don't you write a book? And I said, no, because there's nothing that I could write that would be as good or better than what Tim Keller would write on the same. And so why don't I just support the stuff that he does unless I can come up with something to say that I don't think that he or, you know, three or four other people.
And you worked at his church in New York.
I mean,
I think they heard that in the first episode,
in some ways, such a clone of him. I mean, I'm so indebted to his vision for who I am as a minister and a thinker and writer. And so, but, you know, God put on my heart some things that I think he meant for me to, you know, to share. And so it kind of worked out that way. But truth be told, a lot of what's in this book, the faith and work thing, for instance, where it was born first in my heart was in our days in New York. And just watching the impact that it was having on people. And so to get to do that here in our ministry and then to get to share it in book form in hopes that maybe it'll replicate somewhere else. Who knows?
Yeah. But. Can I answer why you're the right guy to write this book?
If you want to.
I think what people may not know is you, and maybe you and I talked about this on the show, but we've talked about it in our real lives before. You mentor and pastor so many people that no one will ever know you mentor and pastor. And you create an environment that allows for very public figures to have irresistible faith. And so I think what you've written down, this almost as much as any of your others, if not more than your others, feels like this is what you give the people you pastor. And then we are able to give that. I include myself. I feel pastored by you often. But this is what you give us that we are able to duplicate and give out because of how you pastor. So
thanks, Annie.
So I think that's very true. You are the right guy to write a book about irresistible faith and the foreword by Bob Goff. I mean, you can't beat that.
Bob is amazing.
Isn't he amazing? He's the best.
He's one of a kind. So I was having a conversation with somebody the other day who knows him pretty well also. And compared him to Walt Disney. Like you said, he's one of a kind, and he's not Walt Disney in the, you know, I mean, he's certainly Walt Disney in the fun, hardcore seven sort of way, but also just with how intentional he is and just how fiercely thoughtful and other oriented. He is. So yeah, it was such an unspeakable honor to hear him say yes when I asked him to do that kindness. So
I am a newfound, as you can see on the wall beside you, I am a newfound like major Disney fan. Like I've always loved Disney, but
it took you this long.
Right. So I like it. Uh-huh. And I always love the movies, but I haven't been to Disney World as an adult, and I had never been to Disneyland ever. And bizarrely my calendar lined up that I had an event in Orlando and in Anaheim about 6 weeks apart. Mm-hmm. So I got to go to Disney to go to Magic Kingdom and to Disneyland. And I'm like, He's Walt Disney's unbelievable.
What's your favorite ride?
Peter Pan.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a very awesome. Fantasyland, yeah. 1960s yeah. Disney kind of, that's my thing. Okay. I just think it is, well, Peter Pan's a seven. And so okay. I understand him mm-hmm. in a weird way.
You get each other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we do. I just, mm-hmm. I'm talking like he's a person. But Peter Pan, I just, sometimes when I've watched that movie, Peter Pan and Mary Poppins are the two that I feel like I understand yeah. the most. And so I just
have Mary Poppins could not be a seven.
0% is she a seven. Yeah. But she's just got something.
What do you think? Four?
Yeah, maybe yeah. a four with uh-huh. a three wing, maybe. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
She feels her feelings, but she's bossy. Mm-hmm. So she's got it because she's got to keep everybody in line. But it's just been interesting as I've watched and paid more attention to what Walt Disney did. I think, I don't know anything about his faith story. I just think he understands how to create, how to be irresistible. He understands how to be irresistible.
I mean, wasn't his mission in life to make people feel happy or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that like their
it's that easy.
Mission
yes.
statement?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just fascinating. So Bob is a perfect example of putting together that whimsical joy of Walt Disney with the intention of Walt Disney with the gospel.
And he also shows up in Afghanistan and builds a school for girls.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With balloons in hand.
He is just something else. So this whole month, actually leading up to the show, we've been doing a series on Next Generation. Kind of going like, okay, for 2019, what if we were intentional about thinking about the generation coming up behind us? Mm-hmm. Mentoring, and just so many of my friends at my age are starting to have kids that are going to become teenagers. A lot of my friends have teenagers. Tell me, will you just speak into that a little bit? What do we not know about teenagers right now that we should know? Or what do we need to be saying to them about the gospel that's different than when we were teenagers?
Teenagers, oh my goodness, they're amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they are smart, intuitive, attentive. They have consciences. They
yeah.
really do.
Yeah.
They feel ashamed when they do something stupid or hurtful. Like
right.
the bullies feel ashamed typically of bullying.
Yeah.
Like there's that place in the heart. Like if you can catch it.
Yep.
Like I spoke to a group of teenagers a while back, just a few months ago. And I talked about a time when I had bullied another kid in 10th grade and just how I've carried it with myself ever since. Like I just said something mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've carried that one comment with me all my life, just feeling like if there's one thing I could take back. And and I said, I imagine there's some of us, in order to protect ourselves, do things and say things that make us feel dirty. And I kind of got a peripheral vision glance of sort of the mean girls section.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like three of the four that were sitting in the section I was looking over at were weeping. Like that's me. Like,
yeah.
like there is the point being there's a lot more going on there than what we see at the surface. And these kids are more oriented toward what's right and good and beautiful and true than we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. But there's such enormous pressure. They feel like they're swimming in a sea of sharks. And you know, social media can make it really hard as well, because, you know, there's just the Instagram envy and the unspoken messages of, you know, we're all in this picture, but you're not,
right.
or they're all happy and I'm not.
And
meanwhile, they're looking at your pictures and they're feeling
totally.
The same thing about your life. But that's the world they live in. They call them digital natives. Right.
Yeah,
and, you know, just to handle that with care and don't shame them for being addicted to their phones.
Yeah.
Show them something more beautiful by not being addicted to yours.
That's beautiful.
Andy Crouch is radical. I don't know if I could live to the degree of radicalness that he does in these things, but his book, Techwise Family, I think it's called, there's some principles in there. And I don't think most people can go the full hilt to what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very healthy vision that you can read and build off of, you know, for your own environment, like in a home, or if you've got teenagers in your life, or if you're a youth worker or whatever. Yeah. But I think this next generation gets a bad rap. I think that they were born into much more challenging conditions than I was. And
I think the same thing. I think I would not trade. I will do whatever I can to make their lives easier. I would not trade to be a technology native.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that was last month. Now, next month, we're doing another series where we are having all couples on. So we're having all people on that are in love. So, because I thought February, it sounded fun to me, so I went for it. Will you tell me how you and Patty met?
Wow, okay,
I know, I'm the worst podcaster ever, because I gave you no warning. I was like, hey, Scott, let's
go. That's the best, because then you get the honest answer and the honest response to the question.
That's true. So, and this is a softball, because your wife's awesome. So
She is pretty awesome. So I actually, in my sermon yesterday, told our church that this story.
Yeah.
She noticed me a lot sooner than I noticed her. Like, she is the least fickle, silly, you know, careless person in the world. Like, she's like very intentional, very thoughtful, very sharp, and not but she told her parents before we ever met that she thinks she's gonna marry me.
Were y'all in high school or college, or how?
No, I was in seminary, and she was in graduate school in the same town, and we were at the same church. She was part of this huge group of Young Life leaders that came to our church, and I would do teaching or whatever, and from a distance, she just had this discernment that we had a future together, and we'd never met. And so a friend set us up, and basically, long story short.
How old were y'all at the time? Like, were you in your mid-20s?
Okay. Early to mid-20s. And a friend of ours, there were a bunch of us taking a road trip to this thing, and it was like, you know, 8 cars.
Yeah.
And we were the only car where the person said, well, Scott and Patty, why don't you go together? And everybody else was like, and there were other cars, like those clowns stuffing in Volkswagens.
Right.
And we're thinking there's room for them. And they're like, oh, no, we got this. We got this. And so we had, you know, an hour there and an hour back.
Yeah.
And that was enough to give me courage to ask her out. I was a little gun shy about that sort of thing. And asked her out. She said yes. And we were engaged 6 months later and married 6 months after that.
So, how long have y'all been married now?
Oh, so it was 1995, August. So, August of this year will be 24 years. Yeah.
What's the secret? What do I not know that keeps you married for 24 years?
Say you're sorry.
Okay.
And forgive.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. Those two things.
I can try, at least.
If you can do that.
Yeah. That'll be the trick. Okay.
Yep.
Every story from someone about who they are as people, why they make the art they make, and who they ended up with, you just always go, oh yeah, none of that's an accident.
Mm-hmm.
None of that's an accident. God put you on the same church, you know?
Yeah.
And then all your friends put you in the same car.
Mm-hmm. They did.
I got so much respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know how we always end the show? We got to know what sounds fun to you.
Good night's sleep.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Yeah, I don't want to. That doesn't sound fun. It just sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know, what sounds fun to me is front row balcony seats at the Ryman.
I know.
Dead center. And
who are we hearing or seeing?
I think we're hearing Jason Isbell.
Yes.
Or the Indigo Girls.
Okay.
Or Sturgill Simpson.
I don't know who that is. I'm out.
I'll look him up. Same lane as Jason Isbell.
Okay.
Jason Isbell is like the stellar songwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Which, by the way, you
do you know any of those that I just
mentioned? Yeah, I know. Okay, I was with you on the first two.
Okay.
For sure, Indigo Girls, and I know Jason Isbell.
Mm-hmm.
And you and me and Elizabeth Hasselbeck talked about going to the Ryman with your couples, and we never did it.
Still got to happen.
It's got to happen. So. You and I both feel the same way about the Ryman. If it's happening in the Ryman, I want to be there.
Okay. You know? All right. You're the 7, and I'm the determined 3.
Yeah. So you'll get us the good seats.
We can make it happen together.
My next stop at the Ryman is Ira Glass.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever seen him do a live radio show?
I haven't. I mean, I'll listen to him a good bit.
It's
but
unbelievable.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's brilliant. I know. I'm gonna
He's not
going to
sing, is he?
No, but he has an iPad, and he fades in and out the music and does all the pieces. So it's a live. I mean, it is just brilliant. I just think the world of him. So that's my next stop. I just saw Amy Grant and Vince Gill at Christmas.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's the one tradition. That's the one Nashville thing that we haven't gotten to yet.
Oh, you should. Next year.
We have every intention to.
Yeah. But, it's really excellent. And it's really fun because it becomes tradition-y a little bit. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show again.
Thank you, Annie.
I'm just so grateful. I can't wait for all of our friends to get Irresistible Faith this week. It's out this week. So I'm excited for people to get to read it and step into this with you. So thanks,
friend. Appreciate it.
Gosh, I don't know about y'all, but sometimes sitting with Scott Sauls just feels like a breath of fresh air and just like peace and wisdom, and what a gift he is. And we will just continue to pray that he will get sleep, that insomnia will leave. And yeah, we'll just pray that he gets really deep sleep, that the season of insomnia will end. So if you guys will just put that in your hearts and in your heads, no matter whether you pray every day or you're starting brand new, if this is something you're just trying out, just include Scott when you pray. And what a great leader he is, and I'm so thankful for him and his writing. Make sure you grab a copy of Irresistible Faith. Just hearing him talk about that has me like lit up a little bit. Like, yes, this is what we want to do, this is who we want to be. And I'm so thankful that Scott wrote this book. I have it sitting right here beside me. I just love it. I think you should definitely grab a copy of Irresistible Faith, Becoming the Kind of Christian the World Can't Resist. Make sure you give Scott a follow on Instagram, Twitter, all the places, and tell him thanks for being on the show and that he is in your prayers. And thank him for his incredible commitment to faith and culture and seeing us do good work as believers. I'm so, so thankful for him. Hey, if there's anything I can do for you, I'm embarrassingly easy to find. Annie F. Downs all over the place. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, my new website, AnnieFDowns.com. Well, I mean, I've been AnnieFDowns.com forever, but we updated the website. There's lots of great, really easy information. And the links from today's show on Thursday will hopefully have up by Friday. We're catching up, getting all the links for all the shows put up there so you can find them really, really easily. Those will be at AnnieFDowns.com. So you guys have a great weekend. I hope you get some rest. Go out and do something that sounds really fun to you. I will do the same, and we will see you back here on Monday.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.